Tuesday, January 15th, 2008, upon further review, episode number 54. This week we take on princesses, Italian plumbers, and whales. Diversity. That's what we're all about here at Upon Further Review. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And this is episode 54. We want to welcome everybody in. We're recording this episode in large part because our imminent arrival has not arrived yet. Clea is still pregnant, and our daughter...
She's 5 days late.
Yeah, our daughter has not arrived yet. We've been told...
Everyone says is normal.
It's normal for first-time mothers for the children to be late, apparently, and so Clea is managing. But I think Clea is getting to the point where she's ready to, you know, deliver the baby into the world and begin the new stage.
Well, I've had a really, really easy pregnancy, but this last month is when I've started to get all of the, like, a little bit more uncomfortable, some swelling, back pain.
Yeah.
Carpal tunnel.
Right. Anything else? Occasional delusions, believing that you're a kangaroo, things like that.
I told you not to bring that up.
I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. But in any case, we want to thank. We had a couple of people who have emailed us and inquired, but Clea is doing fine, mm-hmm. and there's no news to report as of yet. And when we do have news, we will certainly post it on the website about the arrival of our new reviewer. In the interim, we wanted to get another show done before that happens, because we certainly hope that by next week, we will not have the same situation that we have now. We'll hope that our daughter has arrived. So we wanted to make a couple of comments very quickly about people who had left comments for us. We wanted to thank Drum Intellect for leaving a couple of comments for us about various shows. And one thing that I thought was interesting, he asked us a little bit about what we had thought about the Obama and Clinton tete-a-tete in the Democratic primary. And Clea and I have been obviously following it with interest. He followed that up to say, you know, that he didn't ask us about what we thought about Republican candidates, because we probably would have given him a zero. Which,
well, before,
you know,
we recorded this, we were just listening to a little bit of the Nevada debate.
Right.
Where they were actually, this was a major topic, it seems, of a lot of the questions.
Right, the back and forth thing between Obama and Clinton, which apparently they're now backing away from, and so now it's going to be... But it's going to be interesting to see what happens and how things go down the line. Interestingly, I would have expected, based upon DI's previous information, that he would have been a Ron Paul guy, but he's not. He actually likes Obama. That's actually the candidate he likes so far.
Cool.
He said, because he hasn't seemed cynical, and we're kind of with you on that, actually, DI. We like... Clea and I both like Obama a good deal ourselves, so we'll see. We may have more to say about that as time goes on, but we wanted to thank you for...
I mean, obviously, to answer your question, I think most people, we hate mudslinging of any kind, and it's just a waste of time and
energy and effort, and shouldn't be done. Yeah. I think he wasn't talking about that, though. I think he was just asking about the primary between them, like the fact that it was the two.
Well, I think it's exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's wide open on both sides.
I think it's great, you know.
Yep.
I think, you know, if you'd asked me this a couple of years ago, I would have said, oh, you know, it's too early for Hillary, it's too early for Obama, it's too early for a female candidate, too early for an African-American candidate, but... They actually looks like they're in contention, so that's exciting.
Yep, and it's pretty cool that history has converged around making it one of the major party candidates be either a woman or an African American, and that suggests something positive. So, so hooray for hope. That's what we have to say on that score. So we wanted to thank him for weighing in on that, and thanking everybody else for checking in with comments and the like. And we have our usual three things on the docket for review tonight. We're going to start by reviewing one of Chris's suggestions, classic Chris, and that is the movie The Princess Bride. Now, we know that we imagine, since this came out in 1987, that we're not going to be, you know, 20 years ago, that we're not going to be hitting any of you with this, what, there's a movie called The Princess Bride? But we wanted to weigh in on it and talk a little bit about it, because it is one of Clea's and my favorite movies. It's certainly one of my favorite movies, so I won't speak for Clea. But we thought it was a good suggestion, so we're going to talk about The Princess Bride first. Then we're going to move on to talk about the Super Mario Galaxy.
Super Mario!
Yes. Last week we had a chance to review Metroid Prime 3, which is a game that I've been playing. And this week we had a chance to review the game that Clea has been playing, Super Mario Galaxy.
You've been playing it too, though.
Because I get to play as a co-star, which is pretty cool. So we'll talk about that. And then we're going to conclude by reviewing a podcast which was submitted to us for review called Whales-Online.org. That's actually the name of the podcast as well. It was submitted to us for review, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Yep.
All right, so let's get started with The Princess Bride.
Ha ha, you fool! You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia, but only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line. Ha 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 ha!
As I said, this is a movie that came out in 1987. It was directed by Rob Reiner, which you may not know. And one of the things that's surprising is, as you start to look into this movie, it's amazing how many different actors that you know now in various roles were in this. Robin Wright Penn, who was in, at the time was just Robin Wright, who was in Beowulf, the movie that just came out. She was in this. Billy Crystal was in this. Fred Savage is the kid, a young Fred Savage. Peter Falk plays his grandfather. Carrie Elwes, who was in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and in Glory and a bunch of other things. Mandy Patinkin was Inigo Montoya. Even Andre the Giant, of all people, the wrestler, played the role of Fezzik. So there were a lot of famous people in this movie, and that's kind of interesting. And it never had a sequel. It never had anything that went beyond this. It's just this sort of self-enclosed movie, which in part is some of the charm of it, I guess. Yes.
It was from a book.
And the guy who wrote it, whose name is William Goldman, also wrote the book. Wrote the book and the screenplay. So he was connected on both of them. Very quickly, and then I'll let Clea talk about what she likes about it. The movie follows the exploits. It's basically a grandfather reading to his sick grandchild this book, The Princess Bride.
Right.
And it reads, oh, remind me to talk about the little bit of trivia I know about this movie at the end, Clea. I want to remember that. And the movie basically follows the plot of this character, this swordsman who's trying to get back the princess who has been taken away by a not so nice prince to be married. And he has
his
to essentially
love,
his love, that's right, his one true love
to become princess.
And he has to fight his way through various characters and creatures. He has to overcome mercenaries that have been hired to hunt down and kill him before he can do this. Mm-hmm. Then he has to go through the prince's armies and defeat the prince himself and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a very standard traditional thing, but what makes this book so charming and what makes the movie so charming is that it's all done with this kind of relaxed, tongue-in-cheek...
It's a romantic comedy.
It's a romantic comedy, and it's done in a lot of ways sort of making fun gently of a lot of the things which preceded it. So sword fighting movies, I think Zorro gets made fun of, a lot of the basic kind of monster movies get made fun of,
it's not
like
the standard what you'd think of like National Lampoon making
no. Kind of thing. It's much more subtle humor than that.
Right.
Like they're in the forest at the one point and he's going through and someone asks him about the Rouses, which is an acronym. He says, oh, you mean the rodents of unusual size? I don't think they exist. And then it attacks him and he has to defeat this huge big rat, which is a rodent of unusual size.
Right.
And so that's basically the principle of the movie, and it's one of those movies which is perfectly suited both for adults and for children. In fact, when I was the director of performing arts camp back after I just got out of college, which was for a camp for 7 to 12 year olds, when there were, it was an outdoor camp and there were a couple occasions where it was just pouring rain during the time I worked there. You could pop this movie in and you would have the most sort of G.I. Joe loving kid boys, right, sitting there kind of like awestruck because there are all these cool sword fights and there's all these monsters. Right. And then you would have the girls who, you know, wouldn't have been interested in that stuff, just mesmerized because it's this love story and there's this beautiful princess and there's all of this stuff. They just ate it up. You could put that on and they'd be silent the entire time it was on.
I mean,
and adults would like it because of the levels that it operates there.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
there's wit and there's subtle humor, so adults will like it as well. There are two scary parts of the rodents of unusual size and the eels in the water.
Not to mention when he's being, well, I don't want to get to the next part, but there's other things too.
That's true. When
there
he's
are a couple of
tortured,
other
tortured. There are a few moments. So I mean, that is one thing to keep in mind if you're playing it for your children, that you might think it's harmless fun, but there are some a little bit more graphic scenes.
Although compared to modern day movies, it's or
compared
games.
To probably the video games that they're playing right now, it's probably nothing.
Yeah.
So I mean, pretty much you summarized everything, Greg. I think it's got a lot of wit and great character development, and so for all of, and also just well acted by everyone.
Yes.
Both dramatically and comically. So I think pretty much it's a strong film all around.
It's one of those films, too, which has these little secrets or surprises which kind of pop up as you watch it again and again. For example, this is a little bit of trivia I was going to give. The guy who did the soundtrack for The Princess Bride, somebody asked him, would you do the soundtrack for this movie? And he said, yes, I'll do it on one condition. I want you to show my Little League baseball cap somewhere in the movie for whatever reason. And if you look at the little boy's room, the Little League baseball cap is actually sitting on his shelf. And that baseball cap belongs to Mark Knopfler, who is the lead singer for Dire Straits. He actually did the score for the entire movie. Things like that just kind of pop up over and over again. And then some of the jokes, like the, what's the guy with the Sicilian? Inconceivable! I do not think that word means what you think it means, because this guy is forever saying it's inconceivable that the hero is somehow managing to overcome all of these obstacles that he's throwing in front of it.
I've also, there's a few instances where I've actually read the book, and I did read the book in this instance, And for the most part, it is quite true to the book, which I presume owes a lot to the fact that the screenplay is written by the same gentleman. A few little tweaks, you know, that's sharks in the book and it's eels in the movie. But for the most part, it does the book justice.
Also, I forgot to mention, another one that I forgot to mention here is Peter Cook, who is a pretty well-known British comedian who does The Impressive Clergyman. And this is the one who, if you'll remember, does
Greg's
this thing.
Greg's going to do all of the little...
I just love this. These parts of it. It's marriage, twill waffles. It's the kind of thing you may know, you may have heard those phrases being used by somebody and not knowing what they're from. This is it. This is one of those movies that has a lot of quotes that you hear in other contexts, and then you go, oh, that's what that's from.
The Princess Bride.
You killed my father. Prepare to die. Yes, exactly. It's really a wonderful movie. It is one of my favorites and probably would rank in the 9 category, I would say. Yeah. It also sends a wonderful message, too, about it on top of everything else.
Right. 9.
Okay, so a 9 for The Princess Bride. Thanks to Chris for his suggestion on that. Okay, the second is Super Mario Galaxy, and you can find
Super
this
Mario.
At http://wii.nintendo.com/site/Super Mario Galaxy. Basically, if you go to the Nintendo Wii site and type in Super Mario Galaxy, you will find this game. And Clea, you are the big expert on this, so I will let you go forth with this. Go forth. Mamma mia.
Mamma mia, lasagna. How often do Super Mario's come out?
Probably once every few years. Yeah. Every 3 years,
every
I'd say.
Every 3 years.
Yeah, probably 3 years.
So this is the newest Super Mario, where it's not the Mario
not
Golf.
It's not
the little games. It's not...
Legit Mario.
It's not even Paper Mario, which we have reviewed, which we also like.
Yep.
This is actually a Super Mario game. And it takes all of the same themes. Surprise, surprise, the princess is kidnapped.
That never happens. Oh,
my
come on
God.
Now.
Who would have thought it? And who, Greg, do you think kidnaps her?
An evil wizard.
Bowser.
Oh, Bowser.
Yeah, who would have thought that?
Oh. But Clea, okay. who's supposed to save her?
This is the odd thing.
Yeah.
Mario.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about that?
So it has the same themes. It has many of the same types of worlds.
So typical.
Many of the same types of enemies that you're going to be fighting. Where it differs, though, is you are in space.
Yeah.
And you're going from galaxy to galaxy, where for the most part, when you are on a particular planet or galaxy, gravity is, shall we say, bendable.
Yeah.
You can pretty much walk over an edge and then walk down that next side of the building.
Yeah.
And so that, first of all, that leads to some very interesting plays with your spatial awareness and perception.
We should mention very quickly that the original Super Mario, not the original, which was two-dimensional, but the one that was first put out for Nintendo 64, which was just called Super Mario 64, had a fully 3D environment. That was
right.
The big special thing. So basically what Clea is saying is this is also 3D, but it uses 3D to an even greater extent. You know, Super Mario Sunshine, which was the follow-up to 64, which came out on GameCube, also was 3D, but this really, really is like 3D in every respect, where you can be walking upside down, and that's not the case on every planet. I mean, there are some planets where there are different rules and situations apply,
right.
But Clea's right. Like, it means the camera angles and the whole, like, it's not something for someone who's not good at spatial relations, put it that way. Like, it will test it severely.
And one thing to say, I have to say, is that I think in some instances, the enemies have maintained a somewhat, they're a little easy. And I think that...
Careful, you're not even halfway through the game yet. We're going to get a bunch of bad things now.
No, I mean, some of the basic enemies that you fight are fairly easy. The big bosses, more difficult, obviously. But I don't have a problem with that because there's so much of the manipulation of how to get through a particular area and the manipulation of Mario and your ability. And also, you're also having to do this on the Wii, right? So you're also having to learn an entire new controller system. So I think that overall it gives a good blend of difficult but also not completely want to pull your hair out, which sometimes Mario can do. And there are a few instances where you think you jumped far enough and it doesn't work, or there's a particular, or the timing doesn't work. Mario can sometimes frustrate you.
Right.
But I think that there were a lot of decisions made in the design of this that doesn't make this completely impossible and just instead makes it fun.
Right. And one of the things that's always the hallmark of this series has been the creativity, the sense of, you know, kind of wonderment and just, you know, imagining how long it took them to come up with some of this stuff where, you know, you're swimming, like there's this one thing, there's one planet where you're actually surfing on the back of a manta ray and you have to keep from falling off. And that, by the way, is no easy job.
No,
you have to finish.
That was probably one of the more difficult ones.
Yeah. You have to keep from falling off the track, which is just this like suspended in air, you know, track of water.
Right.
And you've got these things. So that creativity is always fundamental to the series. And I think it's really well represented here. There are a lot of original sort of things that will remind you if you're nostalgic of the old Mario. There's things, you know, you have mushrooms again, you have the Goombas or the sort of enemy mushrooms, you have turtles again, the Koopas,
ghosts.
You have Bowser himself who's responsible again, you have ghosts which are the Boos, you have all these different characters that come from previous Mario games. But if you've never played a Mario game before, you'll be able to pick this up and get started and feel as if you've got this whole new kind of world that you've never experienced. And I actually wondered what their next act is going to be, because now they've got galaxies, it'll be Super Mario Time or like I don't know what else they can do to make it even more dramatic.
Continuum.
But there is a tremendous amount, though, of work that went into this game. It's just overwhelming when you think about the amount of stuff they had to do, the amount of detail they had to consider, the fact that there are Easter eggs everywhere, that you've got stars hidden here and coins hidden there and secret worlds hidden there and secret things hidden there. You know, it is amazing the amount of work that they put into it.
Very much so. And one thing that we did want to add, that there is a difference in this one, is that you can do co-op play. And
which I love.
It does make a difference. It does make the game a little bit more easier. It does make you be able to elicit more aspects of the game because you have another person there with you. The second individual is not playing another character. They are enhancing almost by adding two other controllers how Mario can navigate through a particular area or what he can get out of a particular area.
For example, Clea will be playing with Mario and she's running around doing whatever she does. I can, with my second controller, again using what's called co-star mode, I can freeze different characters on the screen and then she can, you know, more easily defeat them because I've got them frozen using my controller.
Right.
Which is kind of neat and it does make it a little bit easier, but I love co-op stuff and I wish there were more games of that kind. So I'm glad that they've added that as a feature here.
He can help Mario jump higher.
Yes. And I often do, don't I?
Yes, you do. Although sometimes when we're on the main base, you like to play and make him jump when I don't want him to.
Woohoo! I'm giving him exercise, hon.
Right.
Working it out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game which is very family friendly. It's very suitable for kids. There are moments where, I don't know about being, because is Bowser that frightening? Not really. I mean, this is the kind of thing where kids will certainly enjoy it. But I have to say, I mean, Clea has loved Mario for a long time. But, you know, even adults will find these little kind of almost inside jokes, not to the same extent as what you find in a Paper Mario game.
Right.
But you will find some kind of inside information, which is sort of funny and is stuff that probably will go over a lot of kids' heads, but won't go over the adults' heads. But in any case, you can give this to your kids and not be worried that they're going to be, you know, coming across things that you wouldn't want them to come across.
No, and I have to say, I wonder about the age level on this, because again, the spatial relations that it requires.
Yeah, but kids are better and better about that.
I know, that's true.
It's pretty amazing, and it probably helps
probably
them develop
better
it,
than
too.
Us, but
probably helps them develop it, too.
I think very much so.
They've implemented the controller pretty well, I would say, for the most part. Again, the
camera...
It does
use both parts. It uses the main...
The main controller and the nunchuck, the thing that attaches to the bottom of the controller. I will say that they always have this issue with all the Mario stuff, basically with any Ultimate 3D game, which is the camera. That's something which is just a constant frustration. This is getting there. You can tell that they've almost figured the camera thing out. Like, it's not, there's still a couple moments where you go, ugh, you know, but for the most part, they've just about figured the camera out, and that's obviously a very good thing.
When you're moving, you could sometimes manipulate the camera, but definitely not to the extent that other games have allowed you to.
Right.
When you stop, you can press a particular button and look around. And in some instances, if on a particular planet, if you want to shift the planet so that you're right side up, shift the screen so that you're right side up, you can do that. But that's not consistently offered everywhere.
Right. This has been nominated in a lot of places for Game of the Year. And I mean, I can certainly understand why. You know, Nintendo, as I think I've said before in relation to the Metroid games, Nintendo very seldom does this stuff badly. They very seldom get a game like this wrong. And I think they've gotten this right again. I think they've done an excellent job with this game. And I mean, I don't know what you want to say about it, Clea, but I think this is very, very solid. It's very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Rating?
9.
Oh, really?
8.
Well, okay. You want to say 8?
Okay.
What do you want to say? I'll go along with you. If you want to do a 9, it's okay. Just remember, you're not going to have any more room to go up. if we review, you know, 2-3 years from now, Super Mario Universal World Tour or
something.
All right,
something. I'll say 8 because of the camera angles. And okay. There's still... Okay.
8 out of 10 for Super Mario. Excellent game. Worth getting. Definitely suggest that you try it out.
All right.
Okay. All right, the last item that we have on review for tonight is the Wales Online podcast. And you can find this at wales-online.org.
Over the past 6 months, the Wales Online podcast have provided some important information that we need to keep in mind as we consider the Bali roadmap and what we might want governments to negotiate into the final global deal. The experts we've interviewed have told us that whales, dolphins and porpoises are complex social animals. They appear to have sophisticated thinking processes, such as the ability to recognise themselves and each other, to solve novel problems, and to adapt in ways that go well beyond mere instinctual responses. They are in fact more like us than we might have expected. Other scientists have identified culture, language and societies, and we've heard that individual animals may have special roles within their communities, and that their individual survival might have an increased significance to the other members of their societies. If we've heard nothing else in the past 6 months, our experts have clearly been signalling to us that this complexity means that humans will need to adapt our behaviour to respectfully accommodate whale, dolphin and porpoise needs for survival.
This was submitted to us for review by Margie, I believe. I think the G is a hard G. Margie and Jeff, who run Wales-Online. And essentially, this is a podcast, a website, and then a podcast, which is dedicated to empowering and protecting. Their slogan is actually empower to protect whales, dolphins, and presumably other sea creatures. But particularly, they want to focus on cetaceans, on whales and dolphins and porpoises. And they are both Australian, which Clea and I were a big fan of because Clea and I really like Australia and had, you know, have a lot of good memories of that country. And mm-hmm. So that was even cooler. We're like, yes, Australian accent's good. That's pretty sweet. So
they have gotten up to episode 29, which is the first episode in 2008.
Yes.
And for the most part, what this is, as you said, Margie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What this is Margie either interviewing a particular individual who's written a book or is a part of some organization, some kind of activist in regards to this topic, or it is just her talking about a particular aspect of this topic. Pretty much those are the two options, and majority of them are her interviewing people.
Yeah. We actually heard three total. We were given a choice of 5 or 6 that she sent to us. And so we were
given recommendations of listening, which we have no problem with. If you submit a podcast to us and you have particular episodes that you think are a good example or that you'd like us to listen to, by all means tell us and we'll do that.
Yep.
And they gave us 4 and we listened to 3 of the 4.
Yes. And we listened to Respecting the Emotional Lives of Animals, because that's just a cool sounding topic to begin with.
Right.
We listened to In Defense of Dolphins, The New Moral Frontier, which is actually interviewing a guy who's written a book called that, a philosopher, talking about the subject of what we do now, that we know what we know about the emotional lives. The intellectual life and the fact that dolphins are individual persons, as he says.
Right. And then, same with Respecting Emotional Lives. That was also about an author who had written a book about Animal Matters.
And then the last one was her speaking about the new climate change deal, which is being set up in Bali. Or was set up in Bali, and what it means for whales and dolphins.
Right.
There's first of all, a couple of things to note about the podcast itself. They tend to be pretty short. They run from maybe 13 or 14 minutes to 20 minutes on the outside,
right,
which is good because it's fairly quick.
Most of them are around the 19-20.
Yep. The audio quality is okay, but could be better. And this is one of the things that I want to suggest as I was thinking about it. The quality is, I think they encode it at 48 kilobits, which means that it's a very small download. I think it's like 6 megs. You can do it more than that. And I would suggest that you do, because when you get into the 48 kilobit meg, sort of the 48 kilobit ratio, mm-hmm. you're dealing with audio quality, which sounds like it. You know, there's kind of a wavery sound in spots. And especially since they're already interviewing people who clearly,
right.
most of whom do not live in Australia.
Right.
They've already got an issue there. So I would suggest upping the ante on that. You could even go up with a podcast that short. We encode in 128 kilobits and it's still only about maybe 35, 40 megs. You could easily go up to 96 mm-hmm. and with a show as short as 15 to 20 minutes, it would probably only run maybe 15 megs. And I would make that trade-off to improve the audio quality mm-hmm. in that regard.
And for the most part, the audio quality is very strong. Obviously, on her end, it's crystal clear. But for most of the people that she's interviewing, I presume via phone, maybe Skype, although
maybe
I think
Skype.
The quality might be better if it was Skype. They are a little bit more crackly. But it's definitely the levels are, I mean, compared to what we have heard in other podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, it's
the
not.
The levels
it's,
are good. We can definitely hear these people. We can hear what they're saying.
Yeah, so this is not like a major, like, this is a disaster. Not at all.
No,
but it's
but all.
It's the kind of thing where I would suggest that they could do that relatively easily, and it would improve the audio quality of the work. The website itself, in terms of where the podcasts are located, is pretty well designed.
Yes.
They have a spot for each of the podcasts, mm-hmm. and each of the podcasts that they have, they actually have a separate spot where you can download it or where you can subscribe to the feed of that podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And each podcast has its own page with show notes and a picture of the person they're interviewing, if they're interviewing somebody, and a place where you can comment on and rate the podcast, which is great. I could hear in the way that she was describing the thing that all podcasters are always searching for, which is, please give feedback.
Yes.
Please give feedback. Like, everybody always says this. It's so funny. And I was just,
but
I
they actually have a
myself.
Tool for it where for every episode they
yeah.
have a little rate this podcast or
yep.
and or send a question. So you can rate from dull to brilliant and then put questions, ideas, and thoughts.
Which is a great idea. I think having a direct play option might also be a nice idea rather than just having to download it. Having something
that's
where you could actually press play. No.
Okay.
That's a feed number. So having something where you could actually press play and listen to it on the website might be something. Again, not a huge deal, but just, you know, something to keep in mind.
Okay, I think I was wrong. So I guess they've done 30 episodes, the most recent one from January 11th. So they've done two in the year 2008.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about
all right.
that.
And they also have links in this place to, they've got links to Trouble in the Waters is what they call it. So they talk about ideas about challenges that are facing
well, not so much, I mean,
whales and dolphins.
They're not links. They have some different
I'm sorry,
topics,
bits of information.
And then
yeah.
they do have a link.
Yeah, they have links to some of them. Ozone depletion and you know, harassment of whales and whaling and all these different things that are challenges to whales and dolphins that people can be aware of. There are also spots where you can see where the wild things are, where they have some video archives of, you know, being on a boat and seeing, you know, dolphins kind of floating by, or this one, which is really a couple of funny videos about these sea lions, which Clea and I thought were pretty funny watching them
do. And then
do.
They also have a small, they have bits of information about whale and dolphin watching information about swimming with whales and dolphins. I mean, they definitely, this is not a site that's going to be giving you, let's say, the different... I don't want to say this. I mean, they definitely come in from a particular perspective.
Yes, right. The perspective of preserving whales and dolphins, which is not very controversial in my view. I mean,
well,
I know what you mean. Like
that, some people, you know, it's funny. We just saw Boston Legal last night that one of them kind of was going about giving environmentalists a hard time, and they actually the Boston Legal lawyers were talking about how, you know, you could say you can do all this, but that's really, I mean, that's extreme. We can't necessarily do that. So you need to be more realistic, and
yeah.
that has been an ongoing debate within the environmental community. Do we claim doom and gloom and you can't do any of the things that you want to do, or do you compromise and try to say little ways that people can make a difference? And so, you know, one thing that they do say is that they pretty much are against, I think, swimming with dolphins as
yeah,
a whole.
Yeah, they mentioned that. Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because it was something at the end where they talk about the fact that it says from their website, many scientists and welfare people are now saying that dolphin interaction programs are unwise for both the animals and people, and they have a series of reasons why. You know, personally, I think, I won't speak for Clea, I don't agree with that principle, because I think one of the strongest methods of getting people interested and involved in wanting to save whales and dolphins is giving them close access to them. And so it's one thing to say we shouldn't be going to SeaWorld shows, or we shouldn't be going to, and that's a separate discussion,
mm-hmm.
but saying that you can't go out, as Clea and I have previously done, on boats carefully monitored with environmentally safe companies and so forth, going out and then swimming in the water with them, and because of the fear that you're going to be transmitting diseases or things like that, I think is a little overboard if you really want to. It's literally overboard in terms of swimming, but it's also, I think it's a little overboard because it's going to reduce the chances of people to get really fired up. Classic example, the reason that I contribute to the National Resource Defense Council myself is because I got an article that they, and I must admit, they got me with this one, where they were talking about the Navy's deployment of high-frequency sonar, which was literally causing the eardrums of whales and dolphins to rupture. Now, I, having been on a boat, having seen whales breach right near our boat, having swum and seen dolphins right underneath us, I put that together with this news and was so horrified that I literally wrote a check then, right then, and sent it off to them and have been a member ever since. I can't say for sure that I would have done that had I not had this close exposure. So that's just something that you can have. But Clea's right.
One.
It is done from the perspective of the very strongly environmental
movement. I mean, it's a tough one. I mean,
movement,
the same arguments are made, right, with respect to zoos and aquariums.
Right.
Although in some of those instances, the animals are in some way may not be completely healthy. And so the zoos and the aquariums provide rehabilitation in addition to
right.
The contact that the humans then get to have with them and presumably possibly affect their view of them. But I mean, they make a good point. I mean, in my love of dolphins and this intense desire to swim with them, I don't think I fully thought about the possible negative ramifications to the dolphins. We did it in the Gulf of Corinth in Greece. So, I mean, I hadn't really thought about that. So, I mean, I think that their point is still valid, and it's good to hear. And if I hadn't read it, I might not have ever heard that point of view.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a sort of balanced from the other side on that regard. But, you know, much of...
They probably don't need to provide that.
They don't need to provide
that elsewhere.
And in a lot of cases, I don't really know that there is another side. Like, I think it would be hard to argue that we shouldn't be sensitive to the environment, sensitive to the plight of whales and dolphins, or believe that whaling is a monstrous practice that should be stopped. Like, mm-hmm. I know that there are people who could argue that maybe there's scientific principles to whaling. They actually have a podcast here about that very subject. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, it's hard to argue that commercial whale, you don't need to eat whale. I'm sorry, you don't. Like, there's no reason for you to eat whale. It's not nutritionally necessary. You're not generally listening to us, I don't think, an Eskimo who went out and speared the whale by yourself. You know what I mean? There's no need to have commercial whaling operations go on anymore. So that's something which I just don't view as being that controversial. Other things in terms of whether you swim with dolphins or not, that might be more controversial. But a lot of what they talk about seems to me to be just common sense. And I think they even present it in a kind of common sense way.
You remind our listeners, we did meet some whalers. What would you call them? Whale fishermen when we were in Norway.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well.
Because they, like Japan, are allowed a certain couple hundred or something a year.
Yep.
But they made a point to differentiate themselves from Japan.
Yeah, they actually did.
The type of whales that they do and the limits that they've set.
In fact, I remember one of them saying they were kind of annoyed that Japan, they felt that Japan got lumped in with Japan wrongfully, and they didn't like what Japan did, which I thought was interesting. But in any case, it generates a lot of interesting discussion about this as well. Word of the wise, this is not, it's not an incredibly scintillating podcast. You know, it's not the kind of thing you're going to put on and be like, wow, whiz bang. You know, it's not like that, but
no,
it's their interviews, but they're very informative and they're interesting. And clearly these people are not only dedicated, but knowledgeable about this subject, which really helps a lot. And there's a lot of information sort of available to them as well. I'm not really sanguine about the name of the podcast or the website. I just feel like whales-online doesn't really grab you. And there's a whales-online.net too, actually, which doesn't even function, but Clea found that as well. I might suggest that at least for the podcast, they think about using a name that's a little more catchy rather than Welcome to Whales-Online. That's just me.
Oh,
especially because they're interested in growing their audience and reaching out to a higher level. But for the most part, this is nitpicking, obviously. I mean, I think largely they've put together a good product. It does what they want it to do. It communicates mm-hmm. the way they want it to communicate. Mm-hmm. And I would say, other than the idea of maybe adjusting the bitrate in which you encode, maybe adjusting the title, having the direct play option on the website, mm-hmm. and thinking a little bit maybe about that subject of, you know, I don't know, balance,
engaging
or being more engaging in the way that they produce the podcast mm-hmm. would be helpful. But on the whole, I thought it was pretty solid.
Yeah.
My rating would be, I think, a 7.
Okay.
Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say a 7 out of 10 for whales-online. Definitely worth checking out. Please do so. And they also seem like nice people. So that's always good as well.
Do they have any areas where you can, any suggestions for activism?
That's a good question.
I was going to check that before we...
Well, they have discussions and debates, work... Yeah, they have Words from the Wise archives.
These are short little, I don't want to say articles, but little, I guess... Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Yeah, different little posts or
little
answers.
Papers. They are archived papers that you can read, and they give you a little summary.
Yep.
You can also contact them, I guess, if you also want to get any more information.
And you can put your name and email, and they can send stuff back to you and give you some information, presumably, about this idea of having more activism, let's say. But we think it's definitely worth checking out, even if you're just interested broadly in the issue of environmentalism, or if you just like to get more information about these animals that live with us and yet live very differently from us and find out more about them. You can find that out here as well. So,
I wonder what they think of Star Trek 4.
Oh, well, I would hope they think that it's cool. Because if not, I'd have to drop your rating. So you just keep that in mind, people. Okay? All right, so that's going to do it for us for this week. We want to thank everyone for checking in. Remind you, please keep sending us suggestions. Please keep sending us your feedback. Please keep letting us know what stuff we're doing that you like, what stuff we're doing that you don't like, and stuff that we could do to make it better. And please keep engaging with us, because we really appreciate that and appreciate you spreading the word about the show. Otherwise, we hope to have some exciting news for you soon. Hopefully, Kaklia especially hopes to have some exciting news for you soon. And we hope you guys have a great week. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See you soon. The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!